Hi, I'm Erica Ramirez, founder of Illy and host of What About Your Friends, a podcast dedicated to the many lives of friendship and how it's portrayed in pop culture. Every Wednesday on the Ringer Dish feed, I talk to my best friend, Stephen Othello, and your favorites from within the Ringer and beyond about friendships on TV, in movies, pop culture, and our real lives. So join me every Wednesday on the Ringer Dish feed, where we try to answer the question TLC asked back in the day, what about your friends?
This episode is brought to you by Thomas's.
Thomas's presents Pondering the Bagel with Tom.
Oh, the paradox of the bagel. Tis crunchy yet soft. Tis filling yet has a hole. Tis a vehicle for spreads, but only travels from toaster to plate. Thomas's. Huzzah! A toast to breakfast.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
Tara Palmieri. I'm Puck's senior political correspondent, and this is Somebody's Gotta Win. On this episode, I speak to my colleague Teddy Schleifer, who covers Silicon Valley for Puck. He digs into how some of the biggest players in tech, who were once terrified of being associated with Donald Trump, are now willing to host fundraisers at their homes. We also dish about the White House Correspondents' Dinner weekend and explain the significance of a reconciliation this weekend between Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump. Plus, we break down how the White House is using a bit of political stagecraft to deal with Biden's age issue. Teddy, so good to have you on for a Monday debrief.
How you doing, Tara?
I'm good. My voice is a little, you know, raspier than usual. My vocal fry, as it's called, is, you know, really frying.
Do you have anybody left in Washington, D.C. to catch up with? Or have you exhausted the city's population of well-wishers?
I gave so many air kisses. What did you think? Was that your first White House Correspondents' Weekend?
Yes and no. I mean, I lived here 8 years ago for 2 years. So no.
But you got invited to some big events this time, like Tammy Haddad's brunch and like
I was
after
a big
parties.
Deal when I was 24.
Okay.
8 years ago. No. but for people who are listening who don't know who I am, I lived in San Francisco for 7 years, and now live in DC again as of last spring. So we're back.
Yeah. Well, Teddy's going to actually talk about Silicon Valley and Trump's dance with some of the greatest out there, how they may be raising money for him, even some maybe giving him an endorsement. That's going to be later on in the episode. But first, we're just going to chit chat about the weekend and a few other news stories that came across my desk. So what was your favorite party? What was the highlight of your weekend?
I had a lot of fun at the Tammy brunch. You know, I think I found the daytime things better. It was just like easier to like figure out where you were and who was around, and like the romanticism of an evening event is the trade-off that, you know, you lose when you do things during the daytime.
Day drinking can really throw you off, so you have to choose.
and the weather was not great on Saturday, but I mean on Sunday, Tara, you were busy. I was done when I woke up at 12:30 p.m. on Sunday afternoon, but I saw you had several more things to go to.
Yes, I went to the British Embassy CNN brunch. It was my last hurrah. I pushed through and then I went straight to the Amtrak. Yeah, no, it was good. My takes from the whole weekend.
Sure.
Felt like a swan song in some ways. Like no one can deny that Biden is not doing well in the polling. I think this is like everyone's even making a point of being like, oh, this might be the last White House Correspondents' Dinner for the next 4 years.
Do you think that's really true? I feel like yeah. That was a that sounds good to say, right? Because it makes people in the media feel like they're really caring about democracy and the stakes and blah blah blah. Even if Trump's not going to the White House Correspondents' Dinner, or even if like American democracy is, you know, embattled, like, isn't the more simple, like, people are still going to go to a party and drink.
No. Listen, I went to the White House Correspondents' Dinner
when Trump was
in office. I sat next to Kellyanne Conway when I was at ABC News White House correspondent. She was our guest. It goes on. It doesn't stop.
Yeah.
It's just a different vibe. But frankly, there were no stars that would come during the Trump years. And
this year felt very low wattage as well. Like for everyone who was a real star fucker in Washington and enjoys having these celebrities come to town, it was very low wattage this weekend. I mean, you had Colin Jost and Scarlett Johansson, like a few other people like John Hamm, but you know, people that I was talking to were saying that a lot of these celebrities, they don't want to be associated with the administration right now because of the war in Gaza. And they just don't want to be associated with anything political, especially in an election year. And that's why a lot of them sat it out. But really, I just like, it used to be at that after party at the French ambassador's residence, like it used to be like filled with celebrities. You know, it was just basically people who are on TV that host shows, some correspondents, some TV executives, and like three or four celebrities. I just didn't get the feeling that there was a lot of interest in being photographed at an event where there were protesters outside and like the Palestinian flag hanging from the Capitol Hilton.
People had to settle for Tony P, who by the end of the weekend, his sex appeal as someone to go talk to had diminished.
Who
rapidly.
Is Tony P again? Should I know this?
We need to cut this part of the podcast, Tara.
Really? I don't know anything. I will be honest. People think I should know everything about pop culture. I really don't know much at all. And I feel terrible about it. I don't have the time or energy. Tony P, tell me, who is Tony P?
I will give you, this is exactly what he wants. He wants me, like the slightly younger millennial, to explain it to the slightly older millennial about how the internet works.
Is he a TikTok guy or something?
I'm going to do this, but for people who are listening, I want you to know that I'm rolling my eyes for all 45 seconds.
Oh my God. Teddy is always rolling his eyes. I'm surprised they haven't gotten stuck back there yet.
True. I'm a
quintessential eye roller.
I struggle. Okay. The quick 45 second version. Tony P is a influencer who is a became famous, I would say, in the last 6 to 9 months in DC related TikTok and Instagram content for describing his daily life, which is very mundane and very kind of boring and DC strivery. You know, he describes the day in the life, which, you know, he works at a consulting firm, but most of his content focuses on things he does after work, such as, you know, going to bars in DC, cooking salmon.
Like bad ones, like Hawk and Dove or something like
that? Yeah, sort of like typical kind of like, you know, hanging out in Navy Yard and meeting up with his friends. And, you know, it's very vanilla and homespun and I guess endearing at times.
Is he like a Veep character, except real?
Nah, but he's not as abrasive as that. He's like comes across as like kind of lovable and lame. But that was sort of his old shtick. And over the last 2 or 3 months, his celebrity has really taken off. And, you know, now he's become a pop culture icon. And it's very, you know, like you would see him at events over the weekend. I was not surprised to see him because he's very, very famous now. And he's being mobbed by everyone who wants photos with him. I talked to him once or twice. He's quit his job as a consultant and is now a full-time influencer, and he's being invited to the White House and wants to go into media. Anyway, that was the caliber of DC celebrity that we were treated to. But now I think you could argue he's overexposed. It was too easy to talk to him by the end of the weekend.
Should we have him on the show?
Let's not
Tony P.
Let's not debase ourselves to the cultural zeitgeist that much. But,
got it.
He's overdone, but he's a nice guy.
If you disagree with Teddy, send me an email.
He's a nice guy.
So you disagree with me about the swan song. I felt it. It was not a very optimistic weekend. Gaza, yada, yada, yada. Okay, we had enough of White House correspondence weekend. Is there anything left to say?
It was fun.
It was fun.
I love Switzerland, so I enjoyed the Swiss embassy party. Very smelly party, but with
I heard it always smells like cheese. I didn't go, but yes, I've heard it's always smelled like cheese. And Puck had a party too with Aaron Sorkin, which he made some news. Yeah.
I heard about a party. Tell me about that, Tara.
Yeah, he made some news. He said he's writing a movie about January 6th. So look out for that. All right. I want to talk about the Ron DeSantis, Donald Trump truce that went on this weekend. I don't know if you heard much about it.
I had not. I saw Josh Dossi about 10 minutes before that story was posted, and kind of confused how uh, have that story posted as quickly as it did. But
it kind of read like something he wrote on his phone. But regardless, oh, this is an interesting story.
tell me about.
Josh. All respect to Josh, but it was just like a thinner story than he usually writes. Usually it's him and like a bunch of, you know, other writers, and it's very developed. But it really didn't require that much.
Tell me what you think is interesting about that.
I actually think it's pretty significant now that I think about it. One of Ron DeSantis's donors, Steve Witkoff, he arranged this detente. There was obviously a long-running fight, but it was like a feud. And it just felt nastier between Ron and Donald Trump than with any other candidate. And the reason, obviously, is because so many of the people that worked for Donald Trump, including his campaign manager, Susie Wiles, worked for Ron DeSantis. And they really just figured out how to take him down. And he doesn't have any humor. He's a humorless person. So when you call him pudding fingers, Cuban heels, you know, all of the names, they knew all the dirt. They knew how to psychologically mess with Ron DeSantis. And Trump, meanwhile, felt that he had made Ron DeSantis by endorsing him in 2018 for governor when Ron DeSantis was really not doing well in the polls, you know, that he had made this person who then went on to take him on. So to have this sort of like sit down is interesting. I think Trump knows that he needs access to Ron DeSantis' donor base, because that was one thing that Ron DeSantis was always able to do, was to rake in money. So he sees the value in having this meeting. And I think Ron DeSantis knows that if he wants to be the future of the Republican Party and carry the MAGA banner, then he needs to make nice with Trump.
So to you were positioning this as, or you're seeing this as a breakthrough from kind of where things were after the election, which was, you know, things were nasty, and DeSantis, you know, after he dropped out, when was that? Early February, you know, it's now been almost 3 months. And we're seeing him actively engage in, you know, trying to use whatever resources he has at his disposal to help out the Trump team. And whether that's, yep, you know, purely selfish or has some broader meaning, you see this as a significant sign of some breakthrough. Am I hearing you correctly?
It's self-serving for both of them. And it's a breakthrough. He was probably the most popular Republican, even more so than Trump, after the 2022 election, in which Trump basically lost all the midterms and he was polling really low. And there were some polls that showed Ron DeSantis beating Trump in New Hampshire. Like, there was a lot of promise. He was the future of the Republican Party. The establishment put all their chips behind Ron DeSantis to carry the party forward and to move on from Trump. So I do think it's significant, although I don't think that Ron DeSantis is that guy anymore. I think he wants to be that person again. He's a young guy. He's 45 or something like that, 44, 45 years old. He's got a lot of life inside of him. And I don't think he wants to be Lion Ted Cruz and be branded with, you know, DeSanctimonious forever, which I guess Trump said he's retiring that name. And I think Trump knows he could use some of these DeSantis donors, more of these normies that were hoping that he could take Trump on and get rid of him.
Sure.
Sure.
I'm not a buyer. This is as significant. You know, my impression of the DeSantis fundraising base, was that it was not really, well, there's sort of two parts of it. I would say one part of it was just organized all around Florida, that, like, you know, there was this kind of Florida Tallahassee industrial complex, of people who, you know, absolutely, laid it on thick with him.
Lobbyists
or just attendant, you know,
big sugar
on strivers, sure, big sugar, stuff like that. And those people are excited about DeSantis because, you know, he would have helped as president. He would have been good for Florida's commercial interests. And even if he wasn't, you know, the DeSantis people, would look favorably upon, you know, helping his presidential campaign, even if he stayed as the incumbent governor, which, you know, he's just elected in 2022. He's gonna be governor for, you know, several more years after this, right? I mean, you might as well.
But he's termed out afterwards, so he needs to figure out what's next.
If you're a Republican in Florida, you know, helping DeSantis, is just smart, you know, positioning. And like, does like DeSantis saying, you know, donate to Donald Trump, like, I guess, does that really help the Florida sugar lobbyist? I think it kind of depends, or is, I kind of think, is that really convincing with the Florida sugar lobbyist? I think it really depends on whether or not DeSantis really communicates privately this is important to him, right? Because, you know, collecting a favor with Governor Ron DeSantis if you're the Florida sugar lobbyist and you're donating to Donald Trump? Unclear. The second part of the DeSantis donor base is you know, where these normie mainstream anti-Trump.
Right. That's who I think that Trump really wants to tap into.
Right. And does DeSantis really help, you know, move those people to the Trump camp? I'm also kind of bearish on that. I mean, I don't think that those people were actually that loyal to Ron DeSantis specifically. They were loyal to the idea of beating Trump, and DeSantis was seen, as you point out, as the best way to do that. Are those people like part of the DeSantis family and loyal to, you know, doing this going forward because DeSantis tells them to? I don't know. I mean, like the argument for these people to get involved with Donald Trump at this point, there are better arguments than Ron DeSantis says so. I mean, there's, you know, the fact that Trump's the Republican nominee, they're, you know, they tried to beat him during the primary, they lost. He's their only game in town. Like, if you want to be relevant in Republican politics.
So a door knock from Ron DeSantis might not change their mind anyway.
I don't think it matters that much. Yeah. That's kind of my read.
Got it. Doesn't matter. That's why it was a short story.
Well, I think it matters. Okay. I think it matters from a symbolic perspective. And I think it matters for DeSantis's attempt to kind of regain his relevancy in the Republican
Party. Yeah, it matters more for DeSantis, I think, than anything else.
Yeah, I don't think it matters that much for Trump. And that's why, you know, like, I mean, you know, Trump has not done a ton to, at least before this, as far as we know, to like win over DeSantis or like, frankly, to win over like Nikki Haley, right? You know, Nikki Haley.
Right.
Dropped out, you know, a month after DeSantis, still has not endorsed Donald Trump.
That would be a bigger get.
Yeah, I think that'd be more.
Because
I think
she
be
actually
more
has
significant.
Voters attached to her.
Yeah, I mean, Nikki Haley's still getting like 20% in some states, right? You know, I think one counter argument to this is that DeSantis is still the incumbent governor of a swing state or a state that's nominally seen as a swing state. And you know, if you're DeSantis, you know, Trump is presumably at some point is going to be doing public events in Florida to try to win Florida.
Yeah, I guess Florida's a little harder now that they put that abortion thing on the ballot.
Yeah, but
no,
I mean,
I get it.
You know, the point is that DeSantis would have to appear at some Republican events and sort of answer how he's feeling about Trump.
It's better to not have it be awkward at this point, and it's better for Ron DeSantis.
Yeah.
All right, I want to move on, though, because I don't want to talk too much about Ron DeSantis anymore. There is another story. Biden, Axios reports that he now has walkers, that when he goes from the White House to Marine One and he crosses the lawn, that he's now surrounded by walkers because they don't want the video and the image of him and his stiff gait and his shuffling feet and the impression that he looks older. And so now, instead of walking by himself, which is how the president usually walks to Marine One, he's now surrounded by people, deflects photography, etc. This is obviously the stagecraft of politics. We know that. What do you think, Teddy?
Well, it's the stagecraft of politics for someone who's that old.
Right.
Or you're saying the optics of the walk are stagecraft in general.
I think this is stagecraft, how they're surrounding him with other people so that you can't get a picture of him moving anymore. Like, how long is that going to last?
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, I think the reporting on this is totally, totally legitimate. And I know, obviously, like, you know, like people make fun of the media for like obsessing over Biden's shoes and the, you know, efforts to, you know, protect him physically, mentally. But look, this is like a very, very old president of the United States. And anything that breaks news about the efforts to either legitimately protect him or at least portray the perception of him in a you know, more friendly light, I think that's totally fair game.
It's totally fair game. And we're not getting access to him anyway in the form of interviews. You have to take note of the observance if you're not getting the interview. He's not going up to the press on his way to Marine One. Sometimes he does.
You're saying that like we end up over-scrutinizing the walk and the shoes because there's no real like other forms
access.
Of like quote scrutiny. Yeah.
Exactly. And there's really not a chance as often for journalists, as much as they'd like, to legitimately scrutinize the candidate, the president, and his cognitive or whatever abilities. You know, he is, like you said, the oldest president in history. So it's not surprising that this is a story.
Yeah. Though, I mean, the sense of kind of aghast that that Biden people display about these things shows you just how sensitive they are to any kind of scrutiny on the age front. And obviously that's a very touchy subject, touchy White House, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, like they laugh at the idea that like, you know, reporters are spending their time counting the number of people that are walking with Biden. Like, you know, we're doing some, you know, mathematics PhD here.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And like, you know, and Biden said that as much on on Saturday at the dinner, right? I mean, the president of the United States was using this opportunity when he has the press before him to say that, you know, reporters should be focused more on the stakes of the election. Reporters should be less focused on the horse race, blah, blah, blah. We've heard that like 1,000 times, but
Right.
You know, the age question
is a huge factor for voters too, by the way.
So it is. I am pro age reporting. and I think it's a legitimate topic of conversation and a legitimate thing for people to write about. And, Biden, both was trying to pierce the tension by talking about age so much in a speech on Saturday night. But also chastise reporters for obsessing over it. And I think you could have a reasonable debate about what qualifies as obsession.
No, that was a tactical choice to start going humor on age. That was a choice because he wasn't always funny about it. They were very defensive in the first year or so into the administration.
It's easy to make jokes about your age when you're, you know, at the podium and, you know, writing a scripted thing and, you know.
But when you're in a more vulnerable position, like taking questions from reporters, it's not as easy.
I mean, I'm not an expert on political communications here, but like, you know, I can tell you when you talk with donors about this and you're like, oh, what should Biden do about it? Like, yeah, sure, make jokes, but the fact is like he's old and that's not changing. So there's, you know,
right.
There's a limited amount of things that Biden can do on that front. And that's why the best thing you can do is talk about Trump, which is what, you know, every campaign is going to be doing. Both campaigns are going to be doing this. It's going to be intensely negative race, you know, talking about all the problems with the other guy.
And there was a little scuttlebutt about the fact that the Times still hasn't gotten an interview with Biden and they're in the final year of his term and they've gotten an interview with every president since, I don't even know, right? They've always had interviews with presidents and this is the first president that won't sit down with the New York Times. And it was kind of like a bit of a back and forth about that, whether they're acting entitled as the White House sees them or whether they are genuinely due an interview with the president. Mm.
What do you make of that all? I've never covered a White House. So you tell me what you think is fair and what's not.
And comparing it to when I covered Trump, there was so much access to Trump. Never had more access than to Trump. He did so many press conferences. He took calls from reporters. He sat down with everyone. He thought, you know, more, flood the zone. Actually controlled the news cycle with his tweets in the morning, set off all the coverage. Yeah, I never felt like, oh, we need more coverage from Trump or we need more access. Every time he went from the White House to Marine One, he stopped and answered our questions. Now, were half of the answers lies or more than half? Yes. But there was always an opportunity to ask a question. It was a wild time, though. Those press conferences were nuts. Like when he was in shouting matches, like, you are fake news with, you know, Jim Acosta. Is that better? Some people might argue. I don't know, but not having any access at all feels extreme.
Well, Tara, if you miss it so much, just wait another like 9 months and, you know, you get a whole other round of it.
No.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
Jedi are being murdered.
On June 4th, Star Wars returns, only on Disney Plus.
I didn't do it, believe me.
She was my student. Let me be the one to bring her in.
Now she is a student of the dark side. An acolyte.
Star Wars, The Acolyte. 2-episode premiere June 4th, only on Disney Plus.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
Okay, let's talk about Trump and his flirtation with Silicon Valley.
Something I finally know about. Finally.
Oh, come on. You can talk about the rest.
I don't know. I'm just trying. Yeah, I know about Tony P.
Yeah, you educated me, okay?
Happy to... No, but I always like talking about things that I do reporting on.
Okay, so yes, this is some fresh reporting from Teddy.
Sure.
Exclusive. Sure. Scoop.
Yeah, I don't do that.
Whatever.
Anymore, but yeah.
You know, okay, fine. Tell us what's going on. David Sachs from the All In podcast. He is considering hosting Trump in Silicon Valley for a fundraiser.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say it goes beyond considering. I think planning is the better word. I mean, he for people who want the Tony P length David Sachs Wikipedia. David Sachs is also an influencer. David Sachs is a venture capitalist who was one of the early employees at PayPal, sort of one of the people involved in the quote unquote PayPal mafia of early Silicon Valley execs around the time of the internet boom in the late 90s, who made a lot of money. And in the last couple of years, I would say, you know, beginning in maybe 2017, 2018, and really after Trump left office in 2020, has started using the money that he has to get more and more involved in politics. And Sachs is doing this in part through being a traditional donor, which we can talk about in a second, but also, I'm not joking, through influencer-dom. You know, the All In podcast, which is a weekly show that started, I think, in 2021, is very influential, mm-hmm. you know, with sort of like Rogan adjacent, you know, folks who are interested in tech or an interest in business. Lots of people, though, I'm often surprised who listen to the podcast who do not work in the industry. They hear, you know, people that hear that I cover Silicon Valley, and they're like, oh, I know a lot about that because I listen to the All In podcast, just like complete randos or normies or non-elites. Maybe people are listening to this podcast. I mean, it's entertaining. It's good and it has a huge audience. And, you know, I am even though they are all pretty anti-media, you know, I appreciate their success in finding product
an
market
audience.
Fit, so to speak. Anyway, so David Sachs was a DeSantis guy. He sort of became somewhat famous in political circles to a lot of people because he and his friend Elon Musk were the two co-hosts of the now, I suppose, infamous Ron DeSantis Twitter launch back in 2023.
Yes.
Right. And Sachs was sort of the MC of that. And he was, you know, pretty close with the DeSantis team himself and, you know, was also very close with kind of helping DeSantis get to know other people in Silicon Valley, including Elon Musk, his friend. Peter Thiel is also a close friend of David Sachs. And over the last couple of months, as DeSantis left the race, Sachs has begun warming up more and more to Donald Trump, to a person that, you know, Sachs has said some pretty negative things about, but to the point I made earlier about how he's got to get involved because, you know, if David Sachs wants to be relevant, this is the Republican candidate of the moment. Donald Trump. So Sachs, I report, is planning to do a San Francisco event for Trump. It could happen as soon as next month, is my understanding.
Has Trump ever campaigned in Silicon Valley, though? That's the question.
Trump did one event in Silicon Valley in 2020 election cycle. It was in September, I think, 2019. And it's interesting you bring that up, Tara, because that event was absolutely shrouded in secrecy. Like figuring out who the host of the event was was impossible. Donors didn't even know.
He was toxic. Yeah,
name wasn't on the invite. It was a whole thing. I was covering it at my previous gig, trying to figure it out. Like very small number of people knew where the event
who
even
was.
Who
was it? Who was the donor?
It was a guy named Scott McNeely who was sort of an internet 1.0 person who made a lot of money and was. Okay. Old enough to not give a shit, essentially.
Got it. But who was there? Who was at that event?
It was not the fanciest people in town, because Trump was pretty toxic at that point. Right. And now This time around, 4 years later, I think you could argue that Biden's more toxic in Silicon Valley. And it seems preposterous
That's
to say,
crazy.
Given, you know, and to be clear, I don't want to overstate this. And this is a speech I give a lot about sort of the red pilling of the people I cover. But I still think your average, you know, family vice president at Google, you're the person you know who works at a tech startup is still like, you know, pro-abortion rights and believes in climate change and liberal immigration policy and H-1B visas and blah, blah, blah. But like at the elite level, kind of the people we cover at Puck, yeah, these people are like not really like Republicans, but they're anti-Democrats. You know, they believe that, you know, DEI has gone too far. AOC is pulling the strings for Joe Biden.
I thought they liked RFK.
Yeah, or I mean, RFK definitely appeals to part of this too. And David Sachs did an RFK stuff as well. But compared to 2020, when, you know, this event was shrouded in secrecy, like Sachs is pretty proud about it. So much so that, you know, he's talking about it to other people who are telling me about it. And Sachs is out there, you know, shaking the trees. And I think that because it's easier to be a Trump supporter than it is to be a Biden supporter right now in certain parts of the industry, I think Sachs will do pretty well.
You mentioned that Elon Musk may endorse Donald Trump. It's not surprising, is it?
You can almost argue he already has. I mean, in the piece I report that
or at least take down Biden, right?
Yeah, that Elon has talked to some people privately about doing like an anti-Biden endorsement, where he says that Joe Biden should not be reelected. And I'll leave it for you know, connoisseurs of the Elon Twitter feed to find the best tweet out there that argues he's already done it. I mean, he's obviously said that, you know, Democrats are infected by the woke mind virus and Biden is, you know, too old to be president and, you know, should be in a nursing home, blah, blah, blah. So like you could kind of argue that already is an anti-Biden endorsement, but Elon is talking to people about doing a formal anti-Biden endorsement. That's point one.
Does it even matter?
Yeah. I mean, I think it matters to the point that he's like kind of like a cultural tastemaker for, you know, certain people. And, one thing I report in the piece is that Steve Wynn, Trump's friend from their days kind of as titans of industry. Steve Wynn, who's also close with Elon Musk, has been sort of the emissary from Trump world and trying to get Elon to do this. Now, like, does it work? You know, does it actually lead to any money? Like, I think those are whole other questions, but there's at least some agitation or energy being expended by Trump world and getting Elon to do this, which I think is notable on its own.
Interesting. So they see value in it too. Okay. You did offer another wrinkle in the story. With the interests of Silicon Valley and Trump, it has elevated J.D. Vance as a potential vice president. Tell me, what's going on there? I know he was close with Peter Thiel, gave him $5 million in the last election for his Senate race.
Yeah.
$10 million. Sugar daddy.
Sorry, I think it might have actually been 15 by the end, is my recollection.
Okay, so they're hot for J.D. Vance, Republican who wrote Hillbilly Elegy, and you seem to think that this alliance could end up helping J.D.?
Yeah, I do. As you've reported, Tara, I mean, there's testing happening right now of kind of major Republican vice presidential candidates to understand their relationships with major donors, and J.D. has some people in his world who could be helpful to Donald Trump. You know, JD is one of the co-founders of a donor network called the Rockbridge Network, which Trump spoke to the other day, which is sort of a group of younger, kind of MAGA aligned conservative donors who, you know, obviously JD has polled them. JD sort of has polled with Peter Thiel, though. I mean, Peter, as I report in my story, is not interested in continuing to be involved in Republican politics.
He said that Trump was a shit show or something like that recently, right? Peter Thiel?
Peter did? I may have missed that.
It wasn't exactly a shit show, but he was like, I didn't expect it to be as bad as it was, the first Trump administration.
Yeah, he said that. He said that before, that he's been, in general, sort of disillusioned with his bet on Trump. I mean, that's not, and he was sort of disillusioned with his bet in part in 2022. You know, he was such a huge player in the midterms, and now he's uninterested in kind of repeating his involvement. You know, JD is obviously elected to the Senate and is not up for election, but Blake Masters is running for Congress in Arizona. And Thiel, interestingly, has not donated a disclosed check to support Blake in his congressional race in Arizona. But that's a story for another time. So, you know, could JD, if he was on the ticket, sort of deliver, so to speak, these other rich people? I think he could. And I think that's value that he offers. And obviously, Tara, you know that other other vice presidential hopefuls have their own sugar daddies that they can bring to the table. But that's just, you know, just one part of the Veep sticks.
People keep telling me don't discount JD. I hear that from a lot of people. Don't discount JD.
Tell me more. What do you hear?
I don't know. It's just, they're just like, he's a savvy operator. He's super close to Don Jr.
Yeah.
He's a good bridge for like the future and the MAGA. He is the intellectual voice of MAGA movement is what they keep saying. And that you just can't discount him and that he could be helpful. Ohio, it's Sherrod Brown. That race is going to be tough. I don't know. There's just a feeling that like that Don Jr. too will push really hard for it.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, I mean, certainly that's a...
And he's not that hardcore on abortion either. I mean, anymore. Hmm. Especially after the Democrats won an abortion ballot measure in a special election recently. He's sort of come to terms with the results and he's moderated his tone on the issue. Any last words, Teddy? Anything we should be looking out for in the Silicon Valley Trump dance?
Yeah, I mean, this is a super important area of interest to me. People have tips about... things in happening in Silicon Valley with Trump or Biden. My email is teddy@puck.news. Do not spare any good gossip or intel you hear about Republicans or Democrats that are trying to kind of shake the money trees here, because that is the one of the big picture thoughts about this and that I report about a lot is that, you know, these are the power players that matter more and more in presidential politics is the tech people. The Wall Street people are boring and lame and doing the same things over and over again. But
and we know what they want: deregulation, tax reform.
I just feel like they're a more conservative group, not like ideologically. I mean, like politically conservative. Like, I mean, like they're tactically conservative. The tech people are fun to cover because they're zanier and complicated and contradictory. And I'm always in the hunt for good intel for Ringer listeners out there.
Thanks for coming on the show, Teddy. I hope it brings you tons of scoops.
Thank you, Tara.
That was another episode of Somebody's Gotta Win. I'm your host, Tara Palmieri. I want to thank my producers, Christopher Sutton and Connor Nevins. If you like this podcast, please subscribe, rate it, and share it with your friends. If you like my reporting, please go to puck.news/Tara Palmieri and sign up for my newsletter, The Best and the Brightest. You can use the discount code Tara20. I'll be back on Thursday.